Welcome back to Walking Away from Arcadia. We're going to be doing a slightly different sort of episode today. We're going to be interviewing Salih, and he is a changeling player in Istanbul. And I was talking with him a month or two ago about how he uses Changeling the Dreaming in a Turkish setting and how he uses some local myths instead of the European myths for the kits. And I thought it would be a really interesting conversation. So Simon and I are going to be chatting with him about how he approaches that and a local project that he has going. So welcome to the show, Salih, and thank you.
Hi guys.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us. And of course, my co-host Simon is also here.
Hi, thank you.
So I guess the first question I have more than about any of the specific ones is, can you just tell people a little bit about yourself and your background with Changeling?
Sure. Actually, I'm a little bit proud of in the anniversary edition of Changeling to Dreaming. I have a little bio about myself and my childhood, and I'm going to tell the exact same thing. Like, I was a imaginative kid, and I guess so the introducing myself with fairies started with the Spiderwick Chronicles. And I guess so, are you familiar with Spiderwick?
I'm not actually. So by all means, go into detail.
Spiderwick's the illustrator and the writer is Tony Ditterlizzi, and he is at the same time Changeling to Dreaming's illustrator. And he made full page beautiful kids illustrations. When I learned he did the exact same thing on Changeling, I was very surprised. And this guy is completely born to drawing fairies. And my mom just bought me Spiderwick Chronicles when it released. And I read it the whole series. And after there was three books, it's completed the eight books. But they're kind of little children books at all, and it was quite amazing because the whole story and the concept is about problematic kids, and they move to another house which inherited from their grand uncle named Arthur Spiderwick. He's kind of a biologist. I don't remember exactly, but he was kind of observing the fairies in a biologic way or a scientific way. And then he started to create his own field guides about fairies. But as a human, he learned lots of things about fairies, and then things go troubled. And after Spiderwick Chronicles, one of my friends introduced me with World of Darkness, but not with Vampire the Masquerade. Most of the people played Vampire the Masquerade at first, but my first experience was Changeling the Dreaming, actually. And he found me on Twitter. There was something about I like fairies and dragons or stuff and RPG. And he invited me to his chronicle, and then I just dropped into Changeling Dreaming 4 years ago or three, yeah.
I remember seeing you post a couple pictures on your Facebook feed, and it looked like your image had been used in a couple pieces of either Changeling or Dark Ages Fey art. Were those pieces that just looked similar to yours, or did you make an appearance in a couple of the books?
Which one? The Dark Ages Fey?
I'm thinking of the Dark Ages Fey piece.
Actually, after I met with Changeling the Dreaming, the friend that introduced me, he's one of my best friend, and he showed me the Dark Ages Fey book, and I started to read the book, and there was an NPC named Salih, exactly same name, and actually he was from Arabia and sent in anime, and it was quite a bit interesting, and I really liked it. It was my second game during that time, and he showed me the book, and I just started to read a little bit, checked, and I saw my name on book, and that's all, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just know the picture you had posted from there actually does look quite a bit like you. So
yeah.
I thought maybe you were actually used as a model for the art, but that's kind of funny that that is not the case.
Like, I guess so. The book is older than me.
That makes sense. Mr. Geronimo was a superstitious man, a crosser of fingers, who knew, for example, that in America wicked spirits lived in trees, so it was necessary to knock on wood to drive them out. Whereas British tree spirits, he was an admirer of the British countryside, were friendly creatures, so one touched wood to get the benefit of their benevolence. These things were important to know. One couldn't be too careful. If you walk away from God, you should probably try to stay in the good books of luck. We had talked a little bit about how you use some local Anatolian myths for
yes.
in your changeling mm-hmm. games. Would you mind telling us a little bit about some of the ones that we talked about? Go ahead and tell the myths, if you could, and just how you use them with the kiths in your games?
Sure. Actually, it's a very common thing that we do in Turkey. Like, most of the people is familiar mostly for the World of Darkness. I've never heard someone using local tales for Dungeons and Dragons. So I have friends, they are using Anatolian tales for mage and werewolf. And I am recently playing a LARP called Istanbul Geceleri, Istanbul by Night. And so we are using our own city and our own lore. And so I am doing the exact same thing. Maybe for the canon, the land I use for the Turkey, in the Fool's Luck book, most of the countries mentioned as kingdoms and empires. And Turkey's name is Empire of Caucasus. Actually, it's quite maybe wrong, because Anatolia is not Caucasus. Caucasus is just from Caspian Sea to Georgia and Azerbaijan, but the rest, the Asia Minor, is somewhere totally different. And in the revised version, in the anniversary edition, they used the same region, plus they used the Central Asia, like Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, and Turkmenistan, which is the original home of Turkic people. Before the Ottoman era, there was Seljuk Empire, and they are migrated from the Central Asia. So I am using all of these regions' mythology in my games, like the Persia, Central Asian, Anatolian, Greece, and sometimes Bulgaria, even Bulgaria and Romania. It's a very big region.
Yeah, so what are some of the myths that you use? You mentioned a couple of them to me, but we didn't necessarily
okay,
go through the whole
stories. Okay, actually, instead of creating new kits, like, I'm very glad that we take something like that, create your own kit rules. But instead of creating new ones, I prefer to use exact same kits, but different names, because they are concepts are kind of like international, like nobility, or maybe inventing things, and knocker is not that belongs to Middle East, but kind of like nobility and home, like forbogans and inanimate elementals, and they are things you can find in anywhere. But for the Middle Eastern mythology and Anatolian or Central Asian, maybe Central Asian mythology, it's very similar to Nunhei and Native Americans because of all animistic and shamanic backgrounds. It's very easy to, they all have equivalents. For example, the name I use for she, because she is a, like, Celtic word, I use peri. Peri actually means in Turkish fairy. Actually, there is very something funny. It's just my observation. When you ask someone in streets, a Turkish person, like when you ask, "Do you believe in fairies?" He like definitely says, "No, I don't believe." But if you ask, "Do you believe in jinn?" He would say, "Yes."
So two things come to mind from what you just said.
Yeah.
I've always kind of wished that the jinn had been written up as changelings as opposed to as spirits for the Taftani.
I guess it's a little bit the understanding of the Europeans, how they look on Middle Eastern culture or all that this desert life and all that Bedouin culture, Arabian Nights. Like when they once used the genie of the lamp, it always continues like that, or like fire elementals. But actually, the jinn in Middle Eastern culture, exact same thing like fey in like general, not
Yeah,
as a specific type. Like jinn is a headline.
Yeah, and that's always the feeling I've got. The other thing that kind of jumps out at me is, you talked about how a lot of these concepts are international. Something Simon and I talked about in a previous episode was how it would be kind of nice if the kiths were all sort of written in a generic way. There's a lot of weirdness with like Arcadia, and it feels European, and then they mention it with the Menhune, and then it feels European, and is it European?
That's the exact same thing the changeling the
Yeah, which I have to admit, I know less about the Lost. I've read
did,
the whole core book, but it was a while ago.
right? Because all of the names from the changeling the laws for even for the specific kit types, you see like wood blood, wooden blood, or like fire something. Like they are all made up names. But you can use for your local own fairies or creatures.
Yeah, and that's something they did with Beast the Primordial as well. They introduced big, broad families of monsters. I mean, that focuses on very, I would say, something closer to the Thelane in Changeling, but there are some parallels, and it's here's the big generic family, and here are some of the names that they're known by throughout the world, but by all means pull in your own myths, And I like that structure. I was sort of hoping for something like that in C20.
It's quite not confusing. Like it's easy to understand. I'm not an enemy of New World of Darkness or something. Like I really like Changeling the Lost as well, but it doesn't quite makes me feel comfortable, maybe,
Well,
as Changeling the Dreaming.
and I think that's intentional. It's funny, I have always liked Dreaming more than Lost, even though, especially before C20, I was always aware that Lost had more usable systems. Like, I loved the systems more, but I didn't love the game as much. It was after our Queer Themes episode, and I'm curious if Simon sort of feels the same way about this, that I realized part of what I love about Changeling the Dreaming is how much it's about loving being what you are. And the horror of losing that, and Lost is a total inversion of that.
Yes,
It's hating what
definitely.
you are. And so it
Because you
just,
are
it.
changed and corrupted and
Yeah,
stuff.
exactly.
And by the way, like there is only one thing that I really like in Changeling the Lost as the enemy, as the antagonists. It's the gentry. Like I totally like them. And idea behind the gentry is wonderful. In Changeling the Dreaming, we have lost ones, and they are turning to mad creatures, or that's the how changelings see them, if they are mad or not. They just stuck in their own freeholds and keep their own true fate themselves. But it's not as free as Gentry or the Game of Immortals. If there would be a same system for the Lost Ones, it would be a kind of funny for the Changeling to Dreaming, like Gentry, but for Old World of Darkness.
Yeah, I actually really like the idea of using the Adheen that way, the fae that never took on a mortal body or the elemental nature of the inanimate, and using them in kind of a gentry kind of way, because there's a really good story to tell there.
Yeah, they shape themselves in freeholds, and they are like compatible with their own freeholds.
Well,
And I like
the Adheen actually just live out in the dreaming. They do incursion into the real world to accomplish things, but then they return. So they're a little bit less confined than the lost changelings are.
Actually, I had an idea for my LARP project. I was thinking about to create a lost one, but players won't be able to realize if there is a lost one or not. Maybe it's he or she is sleeping. Like, that would be nice.
Yeah, I like that idea. In our game here, I decided that we should have a similar idea where, as a changeling ages, they have a chance to, because they're part mortal, fall into the madness of age and have dementia. And they
Like
basically,
Bedlam?
like Bedlam, except they're totally out of control and reality can't do anything about it. So the fae have to deal with the trouble of this thing is an embodiment of everything we want to be, but it's chaotic and destructive, and what do we
Yeah,
do with
maybe it's
it?
like Marauder for Fae, right?
Kind of, yeah. Simon was describing it to me, and I read his write-up of it. I really like the idea of it, whereas Bedlam is like Fae madness, it's madness driven by glamour. This was more like you reach that point in your life where you, as a human, start to go kind of crazy just
Actually,
from age, and then the Fae soul just not having any restraint anymore because the human it's in doesn't have any restraint.
that was a point that I wanted to mention, because for most of the Middle East, we don't have a very strong half a half human creature or mythology. Instead, we have haunted people, or we call them jinli, means jinns, or it's like possessed, actually. For the Darkin or the Athene, it's very proper to use the possession and all that demonic stuff. It's very easy to use as infernal lore or hell-like lore. And that's a thing I use for possessed people or people turn crazy and not able to do their own work, or they just go mad. And yeah, it's easy to use with Athene. In Middle Eastern culture, we don't have fallen angel, because jinn or fae is already the thing between an angel and human. They have their own will, and angels don't have. They are just serving to God and can't disobey to God, but jinn can. But there are also nice jinn too. So it's like exactly the same thing like the fae. It's kind of very similar to how the Christianized version of pagan god before Islam, that era called the Age of Ignorance. During the Age of Ignorance, there was pagan gods, and when you check their backstory and mythological origin, they are the jinns. Like, actually, jinn word comes from jinnaye. Etymologically, jinnaye means good and rewarding gods. It's like fair folk or like merry folk. They
That is a
are,
lovely bit of propaganda. Yeah, it's funny
yes.
that you mentioned Perry, because I grew up in Detroit and there's a huge Arabian and Persian expat community there. And the people I talk to about stuff like that, They always thought that it was really funny the way that the people, the white people, talked about angels being these little things that sit on their shoulders and like little bugs, basically. When I learned the word peri, I learned that there was this huge distinction between this weird thing white people have and then this other thing that they don't really talk about with white people, but it's there.
Like for Perry, it's the exactly same, near the same thing, like she or an normal human-sized elf or something. They are noble. They are not angels. They are not devils. They are between hell and heaven. They have bird wings and they look beautiful and they are quite prideful
Yes.
and it's very similar. Also, there is devs, it means giants, or I use them as trolls, devs.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we were talking about in the Commoners episode how the trolls are a lot more like giants in a lot of myths than anything that was ever really called trolls.
Deva or devs from Persian or in Indian culture, it's very similar to Nordic or Greek titans or giants or colossus. In Persian mythology, devs were the trapped peris for a time. They have a conflict between each other, the devs and the peri. And in the Changeling to Dreaming, also the trolls and the she has a conflict because who were the true rulers and the inheritors of Tuatha De Danann. And yes, it's kind of similar.
By the way, Uncle Charles said, the real reason you never heard the family fairy tale from him is that he didn't want to admit his Jewish origins. Or maybe his genie origins, because genies don't exist, do they? And if they do, they come from the devil, am I right? And the reason you didn't hear it from me is I forgot it. My sexual orientation provided all the outsiderness I needed. Father Jerry glared at his brother. I always thought, he said furiously, you should have been beaten harder as a child to thrash the buggery out of you. Charles Denisa pointed a noodle-wrapped fork at the priest. I used to pretend to myself that he was joking when he came out with stuff like this, he told Geronimo. Now I don't pretend anymore. How do you use both the mythology and the local culture to inform the political conflict in your games?
Do you mean the modern or the Age of Legends?
Both, really, because Changeling kind of uses both of those at the same time.
Actually, I see the conflict between the changelings. You know, there is an internet meme, the Democratic and Republican, and there was the North and the South. I don't remember what was like. It's very four-poled thing. There is unsilly and silly and commoner and a noble. When I just saw it first time, it was a little bit confusing, but you just have to choose what should you use predominantly. In my games, we mostly use the courts separately, and commoners and nobles are similar to Ottoman courts. I literally translate the words for commoner and noble and silly and unsilly because all of these has their own equivalent in Turkish mythology and in medieval Turkic culture. And yes, it's kind of very similar to this. But there is a difference from maybe European fae. We don't have a very strong feudal system.
Which is really central to Changelings. I'm curious how you modify things at all to reflect the societal hierarchies you have.
Actually, we have empire or sultan or padishah, which I use generally as a title. We have pashas or beys, pronounced bey in BIY. It's actually it means kind of man version of like bey and hanım. Han also means king. Hanum means kind of queen, but it's very ancient Turkic. But Shah or Padishah is from Persia or Selçuklu. Yeah, I used all these regions' political stuff.
Yeah, so that kind of brings me into another question. Have you ever done anything with European fae because you're using the same kith and the idea that, these groups are a little more universal than they're written in the game? Have you ever done anything with like, oh, a she came traveling from the Isles now that
Like
there's a
ambassador?
ambassador or just traveling? Because they traveled, because there's more international travel than there used to be.
By the way,
The same
ambassadors
way.
are not noble, like they are just out of title, but kind of serving to nobles, right?
Yeah, serving to nobles, or the same way that there are she in America, but obviously America isn't where they're from. What happens when fae from Europe go to the Middle East and they have this idea of what it is that they are? Like, have you dealt with any of those interactions?
A couple times I played a changeling in London or other countries because the books are written in that way mostly. But once my best friend ran a game, there was changelings who travel into a desert-like place or like Arabian Nights concepted place. They didn't see any Kitayan from Middle East. There was just NPCs like water elemental or something like that.
Okay. And that's more what I was wondering about, is if you've had like Anatolian fae meet European fae and how you
Maybe
work with that.
I can tell the background of my equivalent of Kitayan. I use Umacı for Sloa. Umacı name comes from Umay Ana. Ana means mother in Turkish. Ana, anne. Ana is a little bit more rural. Umay Ana, mostly the Central Asian people use mother and father for their pagan gods. And Umayana is the goddess of home and heart, and she is the protector of children, and she uses the umacı to scare children and kind of educate them how the Sloa do. And so I choose umacı for the Sloa. They are scary, but they are at the same time kind of protector or educator of children. So I have Peri for she nobles, and Dev for trolls. We have Gulyabani. After they made a movie about the Gulyabani, so it's very popular also in Anatolian villages, and it's also popular. Most of the people know Gulyabani. Gulyabani is similar to a red cap or goblin, but not in mechanical corruptor goblin, like how goblin actually are in mythology. Actually, they are mostly like red caps, so I use them as red caps. And Gulyabani word comes from ghoul. Also, it's the origin of ghoul in Vampire the Masquerade. Do you know there was a tale about how red caps and vampires connected during ancient times?
I remember that in the Red Cap Kith book about the connection between red caps and
Yes,
vampires.
actually, the connection between the ghoul and the ghoul, it's very similar to that because ghoul is an Arabic mythology and it feeds on human flesh or blood. And it's kind of a dark fae, how we call them, like şeytani means satanic-like and demonic. The ghoul word comes from ghoul. So in vampire mythology, I don't know the origin how they use for the serving people for vampires. Do you know the origin of ghouls? When they started to use for vampire.
I don't know when that word was first used. I know it was used before White Wolf used it, but I don't know when it was first used. I don't know the origin. Do you, Simon?
Well, the concept shows up in Bram Stoker's Dracula, but the word isn't used there. So probably more modern than that, but not by much.
Anyways, so the ghoul is a thing from Middle East, and it's very fae-like creature. And Gulyabani, it's kind of a human eater fae, human flesh eater or bloodsucker, and it's quite scary. It's very huge and has a huge mouth. Yabani means wild.
That sounds like the Red Caps.
Yeah, exactly. We have lots of inanimaya concept in Turkic mythology because ancient Turks were huge animists. So inanimaya is the elemental and inanimate objects. Most of the Turks, like the any fae for any object, there is a spirit of table, spirit of wood, spirit of ocean and wind and clouds, all of them called Ie. And Ie is the thing that we call in English nymph.
Yeah, so yeah. It sounds like you could do some interesting things with the inanime, but have the gladelings and crofted maybe have a different relationship. If that idea is more central, maybe they get along better.
Actually, it's in mythology, it's specifically called Ev Iesi and Orman Iesi. Orman Iesi means forest nymph, and Ev Iesi means home nymph. Ev Iesi have lots of different kinds, like kitchen nymph and warehouse nymph, or for the forest nymph, it has for the wind, for the fire, for the like natural and artificial. Maybe it's separate by home and outside of home.
So it sounds like the divide for an anime and Turkish culture would be more civilized versus not civilized.
Yes. By the way, even in Changeling the Dreaming Books, it's like that. Like civilized, at some point, inanimate turn into mannequin, like most civilized of the inanime, like all artificial. And the rest inanime is kind of, nature spirits or like something like that, yeah.
It sounds similar to the way we've been using the inanime in our game. We have a strong Ojibwe influence on the culture of it, and the divide between the different kinds of inanime has been whether they are respected or disrespected spirits, not whether they've been shaped by human hands.
When I first read the issue, and after I learned real mythology behind Eshu, I was a little bit like, what? Eshu is a person, not a kind of fae.
That is exactly what we said to each other.
And then I saw Oba, and actually Oba, it's not even a fae. It means king or captain of a tribe.
It does.
There is no such a thing called Oba in mythology.
And we talked about this some in the Commoner episode. The idea of the traveling storyteller is so necessary for Changeling, but casting it the way they cast it is so weird.
Maybe it's kind of pretended.
Yeah,
because I don't want to comment of back history of World of Darkness, but you know, there is a setting called Gypsy, so... For Eshu, I use the Ammar, and for Oma, I use Marid. They are whole Arabian fae, the Arabian jinn. Marid is a little bit stronger, and they are the king and the queens of jinn, mostly. In mythology, they are called a little bit like cruel or furious. But I don't know, maybe Marit kind of compensates the concept of Oba.
Oh, so they're
Okay.
complementary.
And for issue, I use Ammar. Ammar means the djinn who live amongst humans, or the closest fae to humans, or
Okay.
closest djinn to humans.
I
And
really like
ish.
that idea. There's a
Really?
book I've been meaning to
Yeah.
read. It was one of Salman Rushdie's books, but I can't remember the name of it just now, about djinn living among humans, partly because they find humans very interesting, but also very
Was the
confusing.
writer?
Salman Rushdie.
Ah, a Persian writer, right?
Yes. He's actually fairly controversial even
Oh,
here.
yeah, Salman Rushdie is kind of a very huge thing among conservative people, because conservative people in Turkey doesn't they don't look very well on his books,
Yes.
because it's kind of he says and there was like plus verses from Quran, but the Satan edits, so it's kind of
Yes. Oh, wow. I can see how that might upset some people.
yeah. And then some religious people put that verses out. They, I don't know, it's quite like complicated. Yeah. Anyways, but in Quran, in like the original generic Quran, there are lots of verses about jinn and how jinn created. There are three beings which is mentioned in Quran, except animals and like plants. It's the jinn, angel, and the human. And the Quran says, in Islamic lore, it says they are created from a smokeless fire. So sometimes the fiction writers understand the jinn idea is like fire elementals. But I guess so. Most of the Sufis or the Islam philosophers says the smokeless fire, it's kind of a energy or something like that. Like,
Oh yes. So
yeah, like
they're
light
very
or that's a thing that you can't see, but it's like glamour actually. The whole jinn created by fire, just like burning. I don't like that idea. Instead, I like the idea the fire is kind of, I used the word instead of glamour in Turkish, I use kıvılcım, means sparkle. It's the sparkle of inspiration.
That's lovely.
That
Yeah.
is. That's really lovely. Well, and when you were talking about the fire and a lot of non-Islamic writers treating that very literally and it not making sense, that really resonates with me. I've seen that happen with a lot of translations from other languages where a word
Yeah.
translates, but
But
not
mostly,
quite.
mostly the smokeless fire means kind of energy, but not actual fire. So the understanding of fire elemental is very wrong to me, I guess so. Because the Solomon and the Bilquis legend or the story?
I know a little bit about
Yeah,
Bilquis, but not a lot.
Solomon comments to Ifrit. Ifrit is a very strong type of jinn. I use Ifrit as Firbolg in Darkin. He commands, bring me the Queen of Sheba's throne. And he brings the throne in a one blink of an eye. And yeah, it's quite like if that thing can hold the whole throne and brings in seconds, it's very not fire elemental like. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's quite something else, like something heavenly or hell-like. I know, mostly hell-like. The ifrits are not kind guys. And yeah,
No,
so
no.
so I use them as fear box because they have horns and they are very primal, and they are proud what they are. Yeah.
Exactly. Getting back to one of the things about Changeling, even the darkest creatures, even like Thelane, are proud of what they are, which is
What?
the Thelane. So in C20, all of the dark changelings, as opposed to the Adheen, who are, you know, dark kin who live out in the dreaming
Yeah,
and can push in, like the Bogarts or bogies or the other Thelane, like that. The way they're written, they still love being what they are. It's not the kind of tormented monster thing.
Yes, exactly. And for the Merrow or the mermaids, merfolk, we already have the Deniz Kızı, means sea lady. Actually, I couldn't find very perfect equivalent of knockers.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense. I haven't really heard about knocker spirits in as many mythologies, and I almost kind of feel like the goblin, which is what they're based off of, is a more modern
Actually,
technological take on like the brownie.
actually, knocker is from Gaelic mythology, which these creatures help to miners which place is dangerous in mine or which place is not. They are kind of like earth-like fae or like dwarves.
Yeah, which is funny because in Changeling, that kith also exists. I was just reading them yesterday, but they're called something totally different.
Yeah, correct, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Anyways, and the knocker, the name comes from knocking. So they, by their knocks, they understand which place in mine is collapsed.
It is believed that she remained among human beings for a time, but now that the sun and moon of history had set forever on her house, her story became a thing of shadows and mysteries. So maybe it's true, as people said, that after Ibn Rushd died, his spirit returned to her and fathered even more children. People also said that Ibn Rushd brought her a lamp with a jinn in it, and the jinni was the father of the children born after he left her. So we see how easily rumor gets things upside down. And they also said, less kindly, that the abandoned woman took in any man who would pay her rent, and every man she took in left her with another brood, so that the Dunizat, the brood of Dunia, were no longer bastard Rushdis. Or some of them were not, or many of them were not, or most. For in most people's eyes, the story of her life had become a stuttering line, its letters dissolving into meaningless forms, incapable of revealing how long she lived, or how, or where, or with whom, or when, and how, or if, she died. Jinn periodically emerged to trouble and bless mankind. To the villagers of Lucina, she seemed to have dissolved, perhaps into fireless smoke. After Dunia left our world, the voyagers from the world of the Jinn to ours became fewer in number. And then, for a long time, they stopped coming completely, and the slits in the world became overgrown by the unimaginative weeds of convention and the thorn bushes of the dully material, until they finally closed up completely, and our ancestors were left to do the best they could, without the benefits of curses or magic.
I wanted to ask you about something else. You had mentioned the Gateway Between Legends project. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Gateway Between Legends project is the all of the stuff I use for Central Asia, Anatolia, and the Middle East, most specifically for the Istanbul, because Istanbul is between Europe and Asia, and Istanbul's history, you know, the Constantinople and the, like, Hellenic period, the Greeks, and lots of civilizations used Istanbul. It was always a gateway between legends. So maybe if I use this concept between connecting the European Kitayan and the Central Asian Nunei-like Kitayan or something else, maybe I can find a solution for the Xi'an and between the Kitayan. Maybe I find a solution to unite.
Yeah, I like that idea. Simon and I have talked a little bit about the fact that the Nunahi are presented as these very animistic spirits of the land, and a lot of the Native American fairy mythology, they had a more positive relationship with them, although they were still capricious, than, you know, at least post-Christianity Europe. And so they kind of have this worshipful, animistic relationship. And then the Cathayne are just the weird trickster myths, mostly post-Christian myths. And then the Hisyen are diminished gods. But really, all fairies have a little bit of all of those aspects. And so splitting up those three groups, I really at some point want to like nail down rules for how any fae could engage with worship or creativity or animism, because all of those things are sort of part of them, and maybe pick the one that that particular character leans towards, but that it's all there. But that's like a big knot to untie, and it kind of sounds like this would be sort of a place where all of those ideas could meld. You know, Istanbul would be a good setting for that.
Like, actually, I'm not going to use the Xian or Nune in my games. I just want their aspects, or their, maybe the, they come from same origin, but in modern era, they are quite different. So the point, I'm going to use just this region, but differently from European Kitayan, differently from Xian. So it's just bends between to each other. The Native American history, they are migrated from Central Asia. They used the Benning Bridge to reach the America from northern parts. Actually, there was an episode in American Gods, like three episodes before the final.
I remember reading that part.
The first immigrators and the second comers, they are facing with each other, and one of them lose their old gods and accept the Bison god, right?
I remember that episode. It was really weirdly beautiful and tragic, and I really liked that particular story.
In Turkic mythology, we have a very, very, very strong wolf worship, which I have never understood why White Wolf didn't see that legend, because it's very animistic, and we have exact same thing called werewolf, means kurt adam. During the ancient era, it's called erbürü. Er means man, or erkek in modern means man or male, and bürü or bürü means wolf. And it means wolfman. The Turks in and legend, after they trapped between mountains or a place underground, I don't know, they found their way to escape by following a wolf. Wolves showed the way to humankind. So how they escape? It's very like werewolf mythology, werewolf the apocalypse mythology, like.
Yeah, I mean, White Wolf also would do things like set a major werewolf story in a part of the world where there are no wolves. I mean, they did some strange things with werewolf.
They just tried to unite it with evolution, and they, you know, it's quite very as complicated as Changelings history. Yes.
Yeah, that is definitely true.
Well, I like the Dragon King's era. I have a kind of really attraction to Mokole. It's kind of fun. The thing that I want to mention is Puka, because it was quite strange that I couldn't find an equivalent for Puka, because in Middle Eastern or Central Asian mythologies, like nearly all fae can shape into all animals. So
Yeah, that's similar to one of my problems with Changeling, because like the Shi, you know, mythologically, one of their powers is shapeshifting into animals, and yet that got split off into Pooka, which is named after a river spirit that's a horse.
There is already a fae named Katshi, means kitten fae, or Kushi means dog fae in Celtic mythology. So it's a little bit different from Pooka, but during the old illustrations of Pooka, it looks like satyr. It has goat legs and a little bit horny. Yeah. So yeah, confusing.
And I ended up using Cúnamh, which is a Welsh version of that dog fairy. But they're scary. They're death dogs.
You mean
dogs?
The white hound, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Kushi, yeah.
And it didn't seem appropriate to use them with Pooka.
There was... I was actually just listening to an episode of Lore all about the Pooka and all of the weird myths that are derivatives of the Pooka. I mean, you mentioned, like, the one spirit, but there are a bunch of others, including one story in Massachusetts that really seemed to be derived from the Pooka. They're not cute, fun, quaint little spirits.
Yeah.
They're frightening.
They are real tricksters. They are, like, mostly the Pooka lore, they try to make people lost their way. Like will-o-wisps. Pooka is a thing that I couldn't find as an equivalent. But we have metamorphosis, so...
Yeah, metamorphosis can give that power to anybody.
Yeah, actually, one of my three favorite arts. Metamorphosis is very beautiful and very fable-like. I really like metamorphosis. Yeah, the Pooka and the Nokkari is a little bit problematic to use for Anatolia. But in Turkic mythology, you know, the all that animistic and... the wilderness, there are lots of animal fae. All animals have their own specific type of fae.
Yeah, Victor and I were talking about something similar a little while ago that I don't think made it into a episode, but we were talking about the origin of the word Shi and how a form of it is a postfix that gets put onto a lot of other words, where you get Ketshi, where you get all these different animal type of fae.
Yeah. In Istanbul, we have lots of cats. Lots of cats on streets, on cafes, everywhere.
There's a documentary that just came here that I was trying to watch, but I couldn't find subtitles for, about the cats of Istanbul.
Yeah, Cats of Istanbul, you know? Yeah, it's a very beautiful project, and I am quite sure most of the kids are Pookas in Istanbul. In my LARP project, I'll use them as secret police or something like that. Because they have their own lifeful language between each other, that would be fun when they started to tell how the things happened to the nobles. The district that I live in Istanbul called Kadıköy. Kadı means judge and köy means village. And most of the districts named ends with köy, like village. And Kadıköy means judge village. And for the cat word in Turkish, we say kedi. It's very similar to Kadı, so I use Kadıköy. In Kadıköy, we have lots of kittens, like more than any other part of Istanbul. So I'm quite sure they are owned by a Pooka.
I now have this image in my head of, like, the crazy cat lady, but all of her cats are Pooka, like this little army of sprites that she keeps at her disposal.
But maybe the lady herself is a Pooka herself.
Yeah. In our game, we ended up using the Dominions from Dark Ages Fae because they were more flexible. And one of our characters has very accidentally become known as the Mother of Deer, because she did a spell to call up a bunch of deer, and she succeeded masterfully at it, and now deer follow her around and listen to her, and they're her spies.
You know, there is a character in Kyrgyz mythology, I guess so, or near Slavic, I don't know, called Moral Ana, means mother of deers. Exactly the same thing.
Spectacular! We are his bastard brood, the Duni Azad, from which, maybe, down the centuries emerged our garbled Dniza, and the curse he laid upon us all as our destiny and our doom, the curse of being out of step with God, ahead of our time, or behind it, who can say, of being weathercocks, showing how the wind blows, coal mine canaries, perishing to prove the air is poisonous, or lightning rods, through whom the storm strikes first. Of being the chosen people God smashes with his fist to make an example of whenever he wants to make a point.
Islam demonized, or how they see the ancient gods, the jinnaye, because in Islam, it's the biggest sin if you call another being as gods. It's the biggest sin. And when you put something else instead of Allah, it's kind of like worshipping Satan or something like that. Or worshipping something like pagan. And some of the jinn serve to Satan, or they called as shaitans. Some of the jinn are the helpers of the people. In rural areas, we still have cunning folk. In Middle Anatolia, they still make herbal medicine and they still cure the people. They have fairy struck and paralysis by using their own jinn. It's a little bit topic of maybe the Mage the Ascension's Taftani or Ahl-e Batin.
So something that's now slightly higher profile in C20 is the weird relationship between the Fae and Christianity and the way Christianity changed the Fae. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to what the relationship between Islam and the Fae of Anatolia is like and how you've used that in any of your games.
Yeah, the relation between the jinn and Islam, the humans, understanding of humans are close, respectful, and fearful from the eyes of men, because men fear what they can't see. But they know there are Muslim jinns, there are jinns from other religions, and there are infernal jinns, as I said before. The understanding quite different from Christianity, because Christianity see the demons as demons. There is no good equivalent of demons, right?
Well, there's not. And the thing that's a little weird about fairies in Christianity is Christianity moved into a lot of cultures and just turned the gods into demons, and they were evil. And it, for a lot of the same reasons, nothing should be worshipped other than, you know, God. But for it didn't work that well on the Isles. I mean, they kind of changed the stories a little bit, and they tried to turn them into demons, but people kept honoring them and leaving the offerings out for them, even though it became more out of fear. So it's a different relationship.
You know, in Eastern Anatolia, where the Kurdish people live, there is a creature called Shahmaran. Maran means snakes. Shah means king, as you know, or queen. Shahmaran means the queen of snakes. And they still put the picture of Shahmaran the top of their doors to protect themselves from snakes, because there are lots of snakes in around Syrian border and Eastern Anatolia.
That's kind of awesome, and it lines up with a lot of Latin America.
Also, we have Evil Eye, the bead of Evil Eye. Do you know the Blue Beets?
I do. There were two Anatolian restaurants in my hometown, and they both had that bead. They had the evil eye all over those restaurants.
Yeah, if I start to tell the superstitions of Turkey, we can't finish the whole podcast.
Yeah, we do a whole other podcast episode. Yeah.
But the evil eye is very, 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 very common belief. In Turkish culture, evil eye is similar to eye of Balor. Balor had one eye. And in Islam, we call the Antichrist as Dajjal. And Dajjal has one eye too. So I used the house Balor or house of Balor as house Dajjal or Hani Dajjal.
That's some great myth synergy there.
Yeah, I used lots of Abrahamic lore in my changeling games because it's easier to adapt more than Christianity. Even we have prayers to protect ourselves from evil eye. In these prayers, the jinn and the human mentioned after their names. The prayer ends like Minel Jinneti Vennas. Minel Jinneti Vennas means protection from jinn and the man. Jin means as jin, nas means human, and minel means end.
Ghazali thinks the world is ending, Ibn Rushdie told Dunya in the dark. He believes that God has set out to destroy his creation, slowly, enigmatically, without explanation, to confuse man into destroying himself. Ghazali faces that prospect with equanimity, and not only because he himself is already dead. For him, life on Earth is just an anteroom or a doorway. Eternity is the real world. I asked him, in that case, why has your eternal life not yet begun? Or is this all it is? This consciousness lingering in an uncaring void, which is, for the most part, boring. He said, God's ways are mysterious, and if he asks patience of me, I will give him as much as he desires. Ghazali has no desires of his own anymore, he says. He seeks only to serve God. I suspect him of being an idiot. Is that harsh? A great man, but an idiot too. And you, she said softly, do you have desires still? Or new desires you did not have before? He remembered. He remembered how she would lay her head on his shoulder, and he would cradle the back of it in the palm of his hand. Now they had passed beyond hands, and heads, and shoulders, and lying together. This disembodied life, he said, is not worth living. If my enemy is correct, he told her, then his god is a malicious god, for whom the life of the living has no value, and I would desire my children's children to know that, and to know my enmity towards such a god, and to follow me in standing against such a god, and defeating his purposes. So you acknowledge your bloodline, she whispered. I acknowledge it, he said. And I beg your forgiveness for not doing so before. The Duniazad is my race, and I am its forefather. And this is your wish, she softly pressed him, that they may become aware of you, and your desire, and your will? And my love for you, he said. Armed with that knowledge, they may yet save the world. Sleep, she said, kissing the air where his cheek had once lay. I'll be off now. I don't usually care very much for the passage of time, but right now, time is short. I would like to thank our listeners and my co-host Victor, and our guest Salih for joining us today in our conversation discussing using Changeling the Dreaming
in Turkey. And I will say goodbye and let everyone else say goodbye too.
Thank you guys. Goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Me too. And thank you for accepting me your podcast.
The readings from this conversation were from 2 Years, 8 Months, and 28 Nights by Salman Rushdie. The music from this episode was You, Yourself, and the Main Character by Komiku and LSD by Montplaisir. Today's poorly explained echo. Since they banned smoking in bars, the genies have had to resort to dating apps.